When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Welcome back to another Monday morning where your episode will frequently be interrupted by our dogs. Yeah, can't help it. Sorry, guys.
Took us like an hour to get this episode started. We get the dogs to calm down.
Yeah.
Hello, lazy perfectionists. And I can hear you asking, Rachel, can you really be both? And yes, you can, because perfectionism is a form of procrastination. Stop lying to yourselves.
Yeah, no, preach that. If I could snap on here without killing your eardrums, I would be snapping.
You can. You just kind of got to.
Because, oh gosh, I concur, babe. I concur.
The dogs are awake. So, yeah, the dogs are going to be loud, but you're going to have to deal with it because we've been dealing with it all day trying to get them to calm down to record.
Yeah.
So, instead, we're just going to move straight along to the apologies.
Okay. I'm good with that.
You shouldn't be. Because there was a lot.
I'm humble enough to accept you apologizing on my behalf.
Okay. First of all, I am very sorry that Maddie called out all the Scorpios in the last episode description, even though A, that had nothing to do with the episode, and B, astrology is pseudoscience at best. Oops, I said it and I meant it. LOL, it's true. Sorry.
Can I just explain myself? Okay.
I am also very, very, very sorry for Maddie's misinterpretation of religion, in which she said that you should just go murder a bunch of people and then you can just convert and everything will be fine and all of your horrible wrongdoings will just go away. And then you can be a saint.
More or less.
Well,
tomato, tomato, I guess at this point.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yikes.
Oh, no. You've done horrible things for organized religion tonight.
Am I the sole one to blame for the failures of organized religion? Is that what I've just heard?
Yes.
I am solely responsible for organized religion being that low-key the worst.
That is my truth, okay? Now, I'm just going to say up front, I wasn't putting a song reference in this, so your song reference is, I don't know, the entire Inception soundtrack?
Okay.
Something like that. Okay. There was no way I was going to naturally put a song reference in this. It just doesn't fit. Because,
wait, are we done with apologies?
Yeah. Who's those two?
Oh, I thought you said there were a lot. I was expecting more.
No. A lot in quality of what I had to apologize for. Not quantity. Okay.
I would like to say briefly the Scorpio thing. I actually Googled which zodiac sign is known for being like the most vengeful, and Scorpio is consistent. I have no idea, but I just thought it was funny. Thought we'd get a nice laugh.
Actually, it's, if I remember correctly, the most represented zodiac sign when it comes to serial killers.
Is Scorpio?
Mm-hmm. No. I believe so.
Now, no shame to Scorpios. I genuinely have no idea what any of it means.
I don't either, but I'm just shaming them.
Take it or leave it. You and Olga, two of a kind. So anyways, okay, Inception soundtrack.
Yeah.
Is what we're channeling.
That
doesn't really count. So you still have time to worry one in.
No, I don't. If you asked me to name any song right now, not even in reference to this, you asked me to name any song, I couldn't. I don't do specifics.
$3,000, I will be able to come up with a song reference.
I'm not betting you $3,000. I mean, if I wanted to put a stupid song reference in, I could say, I don't know, like Up All Night by One Direction, because this topic is going to leave you up all night.
Boom,
I could do something like that, but it just felt like a cheap, I don't know. It didn't fit well.
No, it counts.
Okay. I didn't like doing it. But we are going to do something a little bit different this week.
Oh, so my head's going to hurt after this.
Yes. Maddie has just come home from a long day of work, and I'm about to just fry her brain, just for funsies. normally, you know, one of us will tell a story, explain something cool, whatever. Well, the other person just kind of sits there and listens and reacts and doesn't really do any work. But that's not what's going to happen today. Because today I'm going to tell you about the Mary's Room thought experiment. And then Maddie and I are going to kind of talk about it a little bit and then discuss it, and I'll go into my opinion and all that. I'll give some deeper explanation of it. What?
Question.
No.
Are there still other people that are available to be co-hosting this? Can I phone a friend? Anybody want to help me out tonight?
Oh, no. Maddie.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm ready for it.
My dear, I have had many a philosophical discussion with you. I know you are prepared for this.
I know. Bring it on.
Yeah, but I did. When I started researching for this, I started with the primary source, and I said, why did I do this to myself?
Yikes.
I have done enough dense philosophical readings for one lifetime. And then by the end, I was like staring off into space, just thinking about one, like just one little word, one little sentence would just send me spiraling in a good way, though, because I was just so into it that I would kind of forget that the world existed for a little bit and just think. And then I remembered why I enjoyed dense philosophical writings.
All right, because here we go. That. Let's do it.
But yeah.
Mary's Room.
Let's just go. So Mary's Room goes like this. Mary is a neuroscientist.
Who had a little lamb?
No. She's a neuroscientist.
All right.
And probably one that could be described as genius.
Ah.
Mary has lived her entire life in a single room.
Yikes.
This room is entirely black and white. Everything she owns is black and white. And the screens that she owns, they only display black and white images. And for the purpose of the experiment, assume that she has not seen it color on herself,
sure.
That kind of thing.
Okay.
So essentially, she has just never seen any color in her entire life. However, color vision is her area of expertise, academically.
Hmm.
She knows everything that there is to know about it, the biology and the physics of it, how rods and cones and optic nerves interact and how they function, and what physical properties and wavelengths and all of that make up colors, etc. She knows everything that there is to know about color vision.
Okay.
She has a complete knowledge of it, like a sponge. Like, she never forgot any of it, all of that complete knowledge. But what if one day her computer screen malfunctions and it shows her a color image? Has she learned anything new? I'll give you a second to think on it. Maddie's not happy with me. I'll tell you a little more while you think about it.
Yes.
Okay. So the experiment was originally put forth by philosopher Frank Jackson in 1982.
Frank.
Yes, Frank. In his article, Epiphenomenal Qualia, in which he says, quote, this is how he explains thought experiment.
I would like everyone to just pause, though. I am, the face that I'm making thus far in this episode is nothing but focus. Like, I can feel my face.
Congratulations. You have.
Being like,
I'm sorry. I'm just.
Like, so intensely focused.
My phone was going off and I pulled it out to, like, I'm in the opposite headspace. I pulled it out to turn off my phone so that it wouldn't be, you know, making noises while we were on. And
sure.
My parents sent a picture of them out to dinner. And my brother responded, Howie Mandel, is that you? In reference to my dad.
Oh my gosh, stop.
Anyway, okay, airplane mode, here we go. So, yes, sorry for that interruption, but, well, the dogs are up, and you're just going to have that in the background. Hopefully it's not too loud. They're pretty far from the mics. So, in his article, Epiphenomenal Qualia, oh, you're deep focus, okay. This is how he describes it. Quote, Mary is a brilliant scientist who is, for whatever reason, forced to investigate the world from a black and white room via a black and white television monitor. She specializes in the neurophysiology of vision and acquires, let us suppose, all the physical information there is to obtain about what goes on when we see ripe tomatoes or the sky, and use terms like red, blue, and so on. She discovers, for example, just which wavelength combinations from the sky stimulate the retina, and exactly how this produces via the central nervous system the contraction of the vocal cords and the expulsion of air from the lungs that result in the uttering of this sentence, the sky is blue. What will happen when Mary is released from her black and white room or is given a color television monitor? Will she learn anything or not?
Yes.
So, okay. I was going to say, before I explain the theories and the philosophical schools of thought and all that and the application of it, what do you think?
Yes.
Why? Continue.
From what I would say is that she, while she might know color, I wager, and this is how I've always envisioned the concept of color, we all see it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's something like we can know something, but to see it or experience it, that adds a layer of knowledge that might not be like crazy in depth. Like I don't think that it was like necessarily this radical, like everything I thought I knew about red is wrong. But I will say, I think that it adds a layer of knowledge to what you know in your brain to experience something, whether that's color or a different culture or, I don't know, a music, something like that. That's my theory.
So consider the possibility, though, that she understands all of those subtle differences that everyone perceives.
Okay, then no, she didn't learn anything, and this is dumb.
But she has never actually seen it. She understands it, but she's never actually seen it.
I don't understand then why, then I don't understand how this can be a thought process. If she already understands it, I don't understand.
So the question is, basically, and we'll get into this a little more later, but the question is, can we learn everything there is to learn without actually experiencing something?
No, so that's what I was saying. She doesn't know it all, so when she experienced it, she learned something new.
But then you also just said the opposite.
No, that's what I said the whole time.
Oh, I thought you switched your stance when I said that. Consider she knows.
Well, yeah, because if you're saying that she already knows everything that there is to know, then sure, okay, then if she already knows it all, then great. But I don't think that you can know it all without experiencing something.
And that is an important distinction.
Which is why I said yes, OG, in the OG.
So this thought experiment is meant to represent something called the knowledge argument.
Okay.
Basically, the main point of the knowledge argument is that the mental states of a person cannot be truly known and understood without personal conscious experience.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be described with facts.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we can hypothetically know everything there is to know about someone,
mm-hmm.
their DNA, their biological processes, the chemicals in their brain, et cetera, and how all of that interacts. But we can't know what it feels like
mm-hmm.
to live as that person.
Yeah, agreed.
We can't fully explain or know what it means in a broader sense to, you know, feel itchy or mm-hmm. bored without ever experiencing those states. So essentially, the implication here is that if Mary knew everything, but still learned something new about color vision when she first saw color, then not everything can be explained by facts and physical knowledge.
Yeah.
That is the basis of the knowledge argument. And obviously it goes,
sure.
it applies to everything beyond mm-hmm. color vision. But it begs the question of, can knowledge of a feeling actually be known if you do not personally experience the feeling? Which is kind of what you were getting at about mm-hmm. like what it feels like to be a person. So the knowledge argument attempts to disprove the theory of physicalism, which physicalism is a philosophical doctrine that essentially asserts that the real world consists only of the physical world, that everything that is real can be explained,
mm-hmm.
Can be explained by and is confined to the physical world.
Got it.
Under the theory of physicality, even conscious experience and mental states have physical explanations.
Mm-hmm.
But the knowledge argument, as I have said, points out the difference between knowing and experiencing, and that in order to truly know, one must experience, mm-hmm. necessarily one must experience. If physicalism couldn't fully explain color vision, then maybe it also can't explain other conscious experiences.
Sure.
And the difference pointed out here then is between the explainable physical knowledge and truly complete knowledge,
mm-hmm.
and that those are necessarily two distinct and separate
yeah.
things. The intangible and indescribable qualities of these experiences that take you from physical knowledge
mm-hmm.
to complete knowledge are known as qualia.
Qualia.
And that is part of what
hit
the title of his article
okay.
was. So this is what Frank Jackson said in his article pertaining to kind of like his, like a short version of his answer
mm-hmm.
to the question. Quote, It seems just obvious that she will learn something about the world and our visual experience of it. But then it is inescapable that her previous knowledge was incomplete. But she had all the physical information. Ergo, there is more to have than that, and physicalism is false. So Stanford sums it up in a very Cartesian mm-hmm. way. Quote, the argument contained in this passage may be put like this. 1. Mary has all the physical information concerning human color vision before her release. And 2. But there is some information... I just had like a stroke.
Yikes.
2. But there is some information about human color vision that she does not have before her release. Therefore, 3. Not all information is physical information.
Mm-hmm.
So in this thought experiment, color vision, like I said earlier, is meant to represent the whole of human consciousness, of conscious experience, and thus it begs the question, can science explain conscious experience,
mm-hmm.
like, at all?
Yeah.
And now I am a very logical person for the most part. I think that just about everything has a logical explanation, but sometimes the logical explanation sounds illogical. I'm always the person that's like, sure. when people are like having weird things happen, and then I'm like, okay, here's 50 different logical explanations for it.
Exactly. Don't go to WebMD is what we're learning today.
Yes, and the noises you hear at night are not a ghost. It's water going through your pipes.
Yeah.
So some people actually do say that she would have learned nothing new.
Well, they're wrong.
So here's my opinion on it. I don't like to take a very hard and fast stance on philosophical arguments because I'm always changing them. But to me, I don't really think that these two things are mutually exclusive, per se.
Agreed.
So you have the two opposing sides. Science can explain everything, and science cannot explain everything. I do recognize that I'm making some generalizations here, but I think that science can explain everything about temporal reality. But just because science can make sense of it, that doesn't mean that we can make sense of it.
Fair.
I have often said that absolute truth does exist, but that no human will ever perfectly understand it.
Sure.
And that's kind of where I'm at with this. So to me, I think there's a lot of knowledge that can only be obtained through qualia. But if experiencing qualia, etc., happens in the temporal world, then it is part of temporal reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And as such, it can be defined or explained by science, but not by the human understanding of science.
Sure. I vibe with that. But this is why Aristotle's my favorite philosopher of all time, because you should always be in the golden mean. I remember reading that and being like, this is now my life motto. Like,
Oh yeah.
It's freaking genius, and that's why he's superior to Plato. So anyway.
Here we go.
No, but I mean,
we're in the ancient philosophy beef right
can
now.
Can I come in and
please comment? By all means.
I would agree that that is the logical and, pardon me, but intelligent response is to recognize that it can't be one or the other.
Right. I think
the sheer fact that we could even like, I think in order to understand that science can't necessarily tell us everything, or that our understanding of science can tell us everything, science would have to exist and it would have to be like legit.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a prerequisite that science is real.
Yes.
And like
yes.
can work.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly science can tell us some things. Right.
Yes.
But there's a next level reality. Like, I think the other thing for me that this is kind of what I think about in all of this is that there's too many human experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is where the biggest divide is here. It's less, my reaction to this is less, can science explain it or not? It's more like, there's too many ways it can and should be explained, like color. You know, there's a million different ways to experience red, even if we both agree, like my shirt, blue, whatever. I would still venture to say you're seeing my blue a little bit differently. You're understanding my blue differently.
Yes, definitely. So, but I don't think that's really the question. The question is like, assuming we have unlimited brain capacity and mm-hmm. we could understand what everyone else sees, like right now, the discussion that we're having is kind of based around the reality, not the hypothetical. So yeah. like the reality is that we can't know those things just because a brain will not hold on to that much information.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could have all of that information in almost like a computer-like brain, I mean, assuming not mm-hmm. like not an actual computer, mm-hmm. but like assuming we could store information in our brains like a hard drive.
Yeah.
Back to what you were saying about Aristotle, I think the defining piece, the fundamental piece that kind of makes this for me not an Aristotelian view is that I don't look at this as the golden mean, as like I'm in the middle. I look at it kind of like I am completely on both ends simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
But I think the golden mean isn't perfectly in the middle.
No, I mean,
it's perfect. It's the perfect balance between both.
Yes.
Which I think is what this is understanding the balance between it's not one or the other.
Right.
And that.
Right.
But I guess I'm just, I don't know if my brain isn't wired to think hypothetical. Like when I think about that, it's kind of like, I see that as a futile scientific question because it's based on a prerequisite that's impossible. So it seems to me like, why would we even, like, what does that question do for us?
Yeah. I mean, you can say that this is futile, but like most philosophy is, if you're looking at it through that perspective, through that lens, there are some practical applications of this thought experiment we'll get to that mm-hmm. later. But more than anything, it's just about understanding the human experience and understanding the limits mm-hmm. of human understanding,
yeah.
the limits of science, the power of our brains, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also just to get you to think and ask questions. This is
yeah.
a philosophical argument. We're here to ask questions. We're not here to get answers.
Yeah.
Really, like my understanding of it is that, like I said, it can be defined by science, but not by the human understanding of science. So science will never be complete because science seeks to understand truth about mm-hmm. the physical world. Like that is mm-hmm. the definition of science. So asking if science can, asking if it is science that explains everything is kind of like asking whether truth can describe truth,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. But where I stray from physicalism is not that I would define the human experience as fully observable or explainable by humans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it can all be defined by science, but not by human understanding of science.
Mm-hmm. So basically, like, big science, big C science could explain it all, but, like, little C science.
C?
Oh, God.
Science, everyone. C-I-E.
Big S science is like the objective science that could explain everything. And then right. little s science is like human science that
is the human understanding of science.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at with that. Because like I think what I was getting at is that just because something happens in a physical reality, and it is something that is physically happening, that doesn't necessarily mean that we can describe it physically.
Yeah.
There is a physical description of it, but not one that we can articulate.
Yeah.
As I've said that like 8 times now, I just keep trying to get across more clearly. I do think that there is something about conscious experience or color, like the color vision mm-hmm. example, that goes beyond facts and physical descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the qualia. It's almost to me like qualia are physical, but not in the sense that physicalism describes the word physical.
Right.
It's almost like being a therapist. Like,
okay.
You can explain everything. You can know everything that is happening in a person's head, but you can't really know it all.
Right.
And there's an interesting idea that influenced Jackson. Called the knowledge intuition, which basically asserts that we have an intuition that no knowledge of physical facts can take the place of what it is like to experience those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that relates to my opinion in kind of a roundabout way.
Yeah.
Like if you combine the knowledge intuition with physicalism, that's mm-hmm. my opinion.
Yeah, I see that.
And it is oxymoronic.
Yeah.
To believe both of those things simultaneously. But I think that most truths are. Like diametrically opposed opinions often work in tandem to explain truth.
Right, because balance.
Yeah.
Because Aristotle is a god.
Okay. Maddie's got it bad for Aristotle.
I really do, man. So awesome.
I do think that, though, that this perspective does kind of raise another important question, and that is the purpose of human language is to convey meaning. But human language is imperfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the question here is, which do we fault for our incomplete knowledge, language or science? I'm not expecting an answer there.
Okay.
But just because, like, we cannot possibly convey knowledge perfectly because human language is limited. So whose fault is that? Is that a problem with science or a problem with language or both or neither?
Both.
Just putting that out there. Probably, yes. But taking it back to, like, the facts of this thought experiment, Frank Jackson actually changed his opinion on this, like, years later. So originally he said, yes, obviously you learned something new, which was your initial reaction. And although I didn't present it this way, that was my initial reaction as well. It was like, yeah, no duh. Like, of course you learned something different. But later he said that even though she had never seen color before, when she did see it for the first time, there was a definable and biological process in her brain. And it wasn't just some cosmic unknowable qualia. Like, there was a mental process that can be explained. But to me, I think, doesn't that prove that her knowledge was incomplete in the first place? What? If you're just going to talk about this being stupid.
No, I'm not. I'm saying, okay, so the process in her brain is not the same thing as still describing the experience and, like, yeah, so maybe, like, in a perfect world, if we were all computers that knew everything, we could describe exactly what she experienced in an objective reality. But all we can describe is still the fact that this is the process that went on in her brain.
Mm-hmm.
We still can't say what the experience was of seeing the color red. Like, there's no way for her to perfectly describe her exact encounter with the color red, what she saw, what she thought, what she did. So to me, that still is like, it's still feeling like, I don't know, if I guess maybe pulling at straws of, like, I still don't think that that would overturn his original thought. You know what I'm saying?
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. That's where I'm getting out of, like, okay, yeah. So yeah, we can explain that there was a process that went on in her head, but that still doesn't prove physicalism.
Right. Right. And I don't know that he was saying that it proves physicalism, but it was maybe not a 180, but, you know, like a 160.
He was backing up towards physicalism, but wasn't all the way.
Quite a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my understanding of it. I didn't go too deep into his new opinion because if you try to follow every time a philosopher changed their minds on something, you're spending your whole life on about 1 year of them thinking. So that is important. But I do think you're getting a little bit hung up on describing an experience.
I'm using describing not in the sense of, like, writing it down like science, like being able to scientifically describe and state, and, like, I use description just in the sense of, like, the physical or computer way of typing up and generating the exact process.
Yeah.
Not in the sense of saying the color red made me feel happy or... Not like those kinds of descriptive terms.
I think, yes, but I think descriptive encompasses all of that.
Yeah.
Both the scientific and the emotional and all of that. It's not one or the other.
Yeah.
It's being able to describe. And this is, again, where in this thought experiment and in analyzing this thought experiment, that language is failing us.
Right.
Because if I just say describing it in a way that encompasses all of those things, I don't think that's really conveying what I'm meaning.
Right.
But, and maybe there is a way to do it and I just haven't found it, but I think that is a big part of where people get hung up on this. But I do think that in him changing his opinion on this, it does prove that her knowledge was incomplete in the first place. And that is the other big question of this thought experiment is, can we ever have, I mean, maybe it's just a different way of wording it, can we have complete knowledge? Or what is complete knowledge? Does complete knowledge necessarily include experiencing the thing? So I'm thinking, like, even if it is describable, she did learn something new. If we're looking at it through the lens of his new opinion, even if it is describable, she did learn something new. And it's kind of contradictory, but I agree. I think I agree with his updated statement more than his first one. His first one being like, yeah, she learned something new. His second one being like, well, it was describable and biological. And I do lean more toward the second one.
Yeah.
Of, I mean, both.
Yeah.
Both. But I do lean more toward the second one. If literally everything that we experience even if it is, it feels very personal. It feels very, you know, psychological, metaphysical, whatever it may be. It has a reason. It has an explanation, even when it feels like it doesn't. People will often be like, why do I do this? Why do I do that? I'm like, okay, here's literally a very simple explanation for why you do that or why you think that. That's just part of biology.
Yeah.
But not a well-known part of biology.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, maybe she wouldn't learn anything. Realistically, she would.
I don't know if I agree with hypothetical at all. I don't agree with hypothetically at all.
Hypothetically
that she didn't learn anything.
Hypothetically meaning if we could have a complete understanding, but I don't think that in this actual situation that he has set up, I don't think she actually does have a complete knowledge. Hypothetically, with what I think he's trying to get at, maybe she could. But realistically, no way.
Yeah.
And now, like I said earlier, this is a philosophical thought experiment. Mm-hmm. So we are here to ask questions, not give answers. So there's not really going to be any closure with this episode. Sorry. Yeah. I just needed to have some high level thinking to feel something. But what?
I don't know if I should be happy or depressed for you.
Good. You see me getting like a little bit manic here? This is a good sign.
Okay.
This means I am finally feeling like I have enough mental stimulation in my life. This is a hard place to get to. So really, there's no real answer whether or not she learns anything.
Right.
It's just to have a better, to be more aware of the human experience and the limitations of science, the limitation of the human brain and the limitation of the human experience and all of those things. But before we finish up, there is one interesting implication or like real life application to this thought experiment.
Oh, I think I know what it is.
What?
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Absolutely not. It's not that.
Dang it.
Was that an actual guess or is that a joke?
No, that was a joke.
Okay, I was a little concerned.
It was a joke.
A little concerned. The application for this is artificial intelligence.
Okay.
And this is where this thought experiment really actually becomes important. So TED-Ed did a video on Mary's Room, and that was the first time I heard about it. And no matter how much research I did, no matter how much I tried to reword this, I couldn't do it better than them. So I'm just going to read you a little bit from their script because
if it ain't broke.
That whole video just made my brain, it just like scratched an itch in my brain.
Put it in the
because,
sources.
Oh, I will. Watch it. Because it just summed everything up so completely, but so clearly and so concisely in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, but everything was there. It was just like perfectly written. Good job, whoever wrote that. I am very impressed by you. So they said, quote, that this is talking about people who are in, like philosophers thinking about artificial intelligence, quote, theorize that recreating a physical state won't necessarily recreate a corresponding mental state. Building a computer which mimicked the function of every single neuron of the human brain won't necessarily create a conscious computerized brain. The knowledge argument applies to artificial intelligence in a very important way, because basically what they're saying is even if we perfectly recreate everything about a person's consciousness, it won't really be that person's consciousness. It won't be a person's consciousness. It won't even really be a consciousness.
Correct.
We cannot replicate human consciousness, even if we recreated someone's brain neuron by neuron, even if we physically created an actual working brain, not a computer, but a physical brain neuron by neuron. It's not going to be that person's consciousness. It simply like won't be. Through the knowledge.
Totally agree.
The knowledge argument, which in AI is very, very important because it makes the idea of complex artificial intelligence much less scary.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Much less dystopian.
Yeah.
And I think even though this was proposed like almost 40 years ago, the most important application of this is now.
Yeah.
Because so many people are very scared of artificial intelligence. What are we going to do when computers are smarter than us? Please, they already are.
Yeah.
What are we going to do when computers become sentient and they become self-reflective and they can overtake us? Well, if you subscribe to the knowledge experiment in any way, shape, or form, or I'm sorry, the knowledge argument in any way, shape, or form, which I, in the Mary's Room situation, I don't agree with it 100%.
Yeah.
I mostly agree with it. But I think if you agree with it at all, then that has very important implications.
Yeah, definitely.
For artificial intelligence.
Just by
people thinking about this, like thinking about this and discussing it, promotes innovation, technological innovation that isn't going to happen if there's a ton of societal fear and pressure to stay away from certain things.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that.
which I don't think was his intended use for this, but
no.
I think it's an important question. Fits.
How many total like annoying catchphrases can I use in a given episode? I'm on a roll tonight.
Let's rock and roll.
Yes. Let's rock and let's roll.
They just let anyone in here? I'm looking for like the dad ones.
Yeah, we gotta love good dad ones. But no, I mean, I mean, if it's, I'll chime in here.
Please do, because that's pretty much all I have.
Yeah, I would just say that I think AI has never personally scared me because of that exact principle. Yeah, and I don't know if I guess I didn't know the exact words for it.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of putting a term behind how my brain thought.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for me, it was always like, the reason AI isn't scary is that it can't account for the human consciousness and the fundamental human quality of nuance.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's something for me, like when I was trying and wrestling with like what makes a human human, I think that idea of nuance, and some people might use free will or, you know, I don't know, whatever.
Emotion, that kind of thing.
To me, it's nuance. It's the ability for us to be different and not be predictable.
Yeah.
And maybe that is predictable that we won't be predictable, but whatever. That to me is what has never made AI scary. And even in this situation, that's what makes me think, again, it's not that we completely negate physicalism or the value of science and its ability to describe parts of the human experience, but there's nuance that our concept of science will never be able to comprehend or put into words. Because
the key word there is our comprehension of science.
Correct. Because that's an oxymoron that doesn't work, is like human
perfect
nuance.
Perfect human comprehension.
Perfect human comprehension of human nuance.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that, it's impossible and it won't work. So, but yeah, I think that's super interesting, that connection there, and like looking at the future of our technology. And
I think you perfectly articulated why this is interesting to me is because it kind of organized my thoughts for me about AI.
Yeah.
And let me clarify and say that artificial intelligence can be scary in that it can be used for scary purposes.
Sure.
We are already starting to see that in some, the way like just the way that algorithms are affecting our brains and that kind of thing, and the way people are getting literally addicted to social media. I think that should be a diagnosis in the DSM. I mean, this is a whole different conversation, but the point is that AI itself is not scary. We're not going to be overcome by
AI itself.
Yes.
The people who control the AI or set up the AI may be able to manipulate it.
Sure, but we will never be able to truly account for human consciousness. It will surpass us in many ways.
Yeah.
It already has. But as long as like we are the ones programming it and we have limited human experience and human consciousness and human understanding, it will never be able to be this because we cannot account for it. We can't explain it. It is explainable by science, but not by human science.
Big C science. Big C and little C science.
Okay. So I was thinking today.
Can we put that on a t-shirt?
That's where I was going with this.
No way.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
What I was going to say was I was thinking today, if we were to make merch, like what would we even put on stuff? Like what are our catchphrases, you know? Like there are so many podcasts that kind of naturally come up with those. And I was like,
Stay chaotic,
what?
Babes.
Well, there's that one, obviously. But then it's like
C for science.
Big C science, little C science.
I think that's freaking amazing.
If we made it some kind of like character.
Yeah.
You know? It was like an adult and a baby.
I'm envisioning like a beaker with a smiley face on it right now. The first thing that
popped in my head. Scientists everywhere are disappointed.
The first thing that popped in my head was that scene in Jurassic Park. That's a dinosaur. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Yeah, have you never seen Jurassic Park?
I have.
You know,
no, actually, I haven't seen the original one. No.
Oh well, then you'll never.
I've seen like it's one of those things that I have seen it on TV like a couple times where I'll start it in the middle of it, fall asleep watching it.
I will. That's a very small section in the very beginning of the movie. So if you haven't really watched it, there's no way you would remember. But it's a little piece of DNA that like floats up, and he's like, "I'm dinosaur DNA," and then it's like a supposed to be like a Disney ride kind of thing. That's like a video of like. how they made the dinosaurs at Jurassic Park. And it says dinosaur just like that. Dinosaur. I'm a dinosaur.
What if we made
Steven Spielberg, I am happy to be a voice actor in your next production.
Okay, hear me out. DNA strands that make up the big C and the little C.
I love it, personally.
Someone please design this for us. Please take artistic license.
And then we can have Bo and Maisie. We need Bo and Maisie to be, like, branded for us.
Maisie is big science. Bo is little science. It's perfect.
No, I just think it's ironic because Maisie's like this perfect little pristine innocent child that, like, of course is like big T objective truth science. And then we have Bo that's like gritty and rough around the edges. And we don't know. We don't know it all yet. He's incomplete. And I just think it's kind of ironic. It's an ironic, perfect description of our dogs.
Yeah.
But thanks for taking me down this philosophical journey today.
Well, it is 10:15 and 28 seconds. I hope this really calmed you down for the evening.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely so need to go straight to
headspace for sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say, part of the reason that I called you a lazy perfectionist, the lazy part, we need to talk about this real quick. Because the original purpose of originally Lauren and I always saying a different name for you guys was we were going to let you name yourselves as our listeners and our fans. And we're like, oh, these will just be placeholders. We'll just do weird, funny things. No one ever gave us a name for the listeners.
You're going to get stuck being people. Hey, people.
We'll start doing live shows. We'll go on stage. Hello, people.
Do you want to be people or do you want to be like chaotic fishes or like
fishes?
The chaos kids. I don't know, like something.
Are they both
at least
spelled with K's or are they spelled with big C and little C?
That's up to your discretion.
I couldn't help myself.
Discretion.
So either way, pick a better name than what Maddie has just given us. And you should send that to us. But we got to get going because these dogs are about to knock down the door. So, Maddie, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram and TikTok.
Hyperfocus Pod.
Twitter.
Hyperfocus _pod.
YouTube and Facebook.
Hyperfocus, a podcast for chaotic minds.
And our Gmail, where you should send us your name suggestions.
Mm-hmm. HyperfocusCast@gmail.com. You can also send us love letters, fan mail, topic ideas, all that good stuff. Got a wonderful email today. Well, just before we started recording about how we are the best people on earth. And
well, come on,
we have this listener's dream job. And then she gave us a topic suggestion as well. So
nice.
I never want to say people's names unless they explicitly say that I can say their names. But you know who you are. So thanks. We love you too. All right, there go the dogs knocking down the door. So we will see you next time.
Adios.
I hope this was a wonderful way for you to ease into your Monday morning.
Yeah, have a safe commute. We'll see you next week.
Stay chaotic, babes.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.